You're listening to Guerrilla Radio, a companion to the Guerrilla History Podcast. I'm your host today, Henry Huckamacki, a member of Guerrilla History's Partisan Brigade. Guerrilla Radio is the spin-off show of Guerrilla History, the main show, which I am also a co-host of. Today, I'm joined by one other co-host for this really interesting conversation that we have ahead of us. I have Matt Deitch with me. Matt, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Matt Deitch. I am 26 from the United States. I am a cultural worker, agitator, organizer, currently organizing mostly for support of Palestine and imperialist struggles in the belly of the beast. I also organize with the National Network on Cuba and along with many other organizations that do similar work. I call myself also a freelance propagandist, which is one of the main reasons I'm very excited for this conversation.
Yeah, and as Matt was alluding to, this conversation is going to be about kind of cultural work and propaganda. And specifically, we're going to be talking about music and art as propaganda. We're being joined by Comrade Davin of the Communist Party of Kenya. Hello, Comrade. How are you today? And can you please introduce yourself to the listeners?
Thank you, Comrade Henry. I'm Davin Otieno, aka Kayostwo. I'm a Marxist-Leninist musician from the Communist Party of Kenya. I'm a member of Pio Gama Pinto Study Cell, and I'm happy to be in your podcast today and have this discussion with you, Comrade.
Thank you so much for being here, Comrade. Just wanted to get into, what is your creative practice like, and what developed first? Was it your politics, or was it the creative practice, or did they develop sort of simultaneously, and how do they inform each other?
Okay, Comrade, I was a musician before I joined the Communist Party of Kenya. I joined the Communist Party of Kenya back in 2022 when we had national elections. The Comrade Buka Ngesa, our vice chairman, wanted, a theme song for the campaign, and I did that. And from there, he started teaching me about, Marxist-Leninism. We have classes every Friday, so I got interested and, I changed and I started singing about, what's going on, because I'm anti-imperialist and I'm against being done in my motherland right now. So Buka just opened our eyes and, I had to sing this because, I have to tell people what's happening, because most of the people around here don't know whatever is happening. They're just there. They followed the propaganda from the news, whatever they're being told by the mainstream media. So After joining the Communist Party, I think this changed my perspective and I decided to do something, different.
You brought up the song that you produced and wrote for the Communist Party. Can you talk about what that means to you, that song, and also where that started to develop and come from when you were writing it? What went into the creation of that piece?
We I'm a footballer, so it was after training. My friends came to me and told me, Comrade wanted a song and he wanted somebody, a youth to, youths are at the majority here. So he wanted something that would convince the youth. So I took, a beat, Gengeton beat, that was what was trending here. So, and I just decided to, be creative with it. I wrote a song about Buka, what he will do. The manifesto, I took his manifesto, read it, then, just change everything into music. Yeah.
But, and just so the listeners are aware, you keep mentioning Comrade Booker. This is Booker Omole, who is the National Vice Chairman of the Communist Party of Kenya. And for listeners who are interested on Guerrilla History, the parent podcast of this show, which I co-host, we've interviewed Comrade Booker on the show twice before. You can find those episodes by just typing in Booker and Guerrilla History on Google, or in your podcast app, you'll find Booker Omole of the Communist Party of Kenya, as well as Building the Communist Party of Kenya with Booker Omole. So those are definitely episodes to check out if you want to hear more from Booker. But Comrade, I'm very interested, when we're talking about music specifically, what do you think it is about music that allows you to connect, particularly with a young audience? Because as you said, Kenya is a very, very heavily young population. And as you were going about the work of building the Communist Party of Kenya, engaging the young population, not just making them aware of you, but engaging them and making them excited is something that is absolutely critical. And music is something that I've seen that the Communist Party of Kenya, from essentially the beginning, has been utilizing in order to engage that youth audience. So what do you think it is about music that in particular has that quality that's able to engage young people?
Okay, you know, as a Communist Party, we have a way that we teach educate the masses. But you find that most of the youths here, you know, they don't have time to read because people, these have negative, you know, assumptions about, you know, books and whatever. So when you take when you do it in music form, they connect with it because, you know, they are used to dancing. This is what they do daily. This is something they enjoy. So you just choose a good beat, then you communicate what you have to communicate with them. They might at first dance, then as time goes by, they listen to it. They, you know, start listening to the message, then they start, you know, connecting. And some of them have been coming to me, how do you do that? And I'm like, you know, you just read, then, you know, you just connect to them. I don't know how to say it, but, you know, the young generation love music generally. So when you communicate through music, they might get it rather than when you try to teach them the class way. So that's why I choose to play music for the Communist Party of Kenya.
And just to follow up, because I know that much of your work within the party is based on engaging the youth population, and this is something that we've asked Booker before as well, but it's worth asking you as well. What is the condition like in Kenya for the youth? What is the setup, the material conditions for the youth population of Kenya like right now? And how does that influence what kind of things you talk about in your music? Because, of course, as material conditions shift, you have to find different ways of engaging people with the music that you're putting out. So what are the conditions for youth like, and how does that influence the type of music and kind of the message that you're putting out within that music?
Comrade, the material condition is not good. We're just trying whatever we have. So you've seen that we've not been able to release our home. But we have a lot of music, but we just have to maneuver left, right, to get something smaller, so that we can do whatever we are doing. But I cannot say we are that good. The material condition, you know, most of us live, majority of us here live under, you know, below the poverty line. So it has been difficult, I'm not going to lie.
Speaking to the material conditions, though, and the quality of the music, why does this particular song connect with the youth, right? Or why does the music that you do connect with the youth? Because I think there's so much music being made all the time. It's almost like an endless stream of new and old stuff repurposed. So it's like, why is what you're doing in particular able to hit something that leads to more of a response?
With here, I might say the kind of genre I do, you know, it's the most popular genre here. So when I choose the beats for that genre and write something about it, the youths just love it because, you know, first, it's danceable. Then secondly, after they dance, as time goes by, they start listening to the lyrics and they start connecting with it. And, you know, the message goes on and most of them start being interested in what is going on and they want to know more, and most of them have been joining the party of late.
Can you speak to some of the reactions that you've gotten from youth to the song specifically? I know that there's a big reaction internationally, but I'm really curious about more on the local level, what people, or maybe reactions you didn't expect, or surprising reactions or inspiring reactions.
Okay, you know, most of the youths here have been, you know, brainwashed by the bourgeoisie policy. So when some of them have been telling me I've been wasting my time, they don't understand whatever is going on. So when you sing about a revolution and all that, they think that you are crazy or something. But some of them have been interested, you know, some of them have come to us, they want to join the party. And I've had so many different reactions.
I think something that's important that you've done as well is that you've been kind of a trendsetter within using music as propaganda for socialist or communist purposes within Kenya. Obviously, music has been propaganda since music has existed. Just generally, it's not being used for the purposes that we would like to see. It's, as you mentioned, brainwashing on behalf of the bourgeoisie, glorifying things like the hustle culture. I know it's something that we've talked about with Booker before. What I think is important about what you've done is that you've provided something like, almost like a model, insofar as people can see that you can take this really radical analysis, this really radical ideology that we, of course, all believe in, that you and I believe in anyway. Can't speak to everyone in the world or that's even listening to that's listening to this podcast episode, but we believe in. And what it's shown is that, as you mentioned, some people thought you were wasting your time or thought you were crazy, but you have gotten a positive response from this song. And that, I would imagine, would encourage other people that have a similar politics to then also begin to think about how they can utilize the whatever form of art they create in, whether that's music or film or poetry or whatever, for uses as propaganda. This is something that, of course, isn't unique to Kenya. We have many filmmakers, for example, that have utilized film as a way of putting their politics out there. Kostas Gavras is a very, you know, good example of this. But what do you feel your role is within Kenya in the music making scene in encouraging other people to also take up this utilization of music as propaganda?
Comrade, like you said, I'm the trendsetter, so it's not going to be easy. But as time goes by, I know people are going to click to it. And you know, most of the songs we are singing, they talk about the reality. You know, the more time goes by, the more real it becomes. So I think as time goes by, most people will click, and some of them will be inspired to do the same. So I'm not afraid to continue doing, you know, that Marxist-Leninist type of music. I don't think there's any Marxist-Leninist artist in Kenya right now. So it's like, you know, when something is new, people have to get used to it. So like I told you, in the ground, people are not that connected right now. Most of my fans are from the international name here. The international, but locally, people are still, you know, brainwashed or all that. They think that I'm just doing it for, you know, I want money from the politicians or something like that, you know. So it's sad.
So, comrade, I'm curious, how has the Communist Party of Kenya allowed you to make this music? What I mean is, what kind of support do they give you in terms of making this music? Can you talk a little bit about the way that they use for spreading the music to people who want to listen to it, as well as connecting you with other people who can help you with making more music? I know that there are other people within your group who are making music alongside you. Can you talk about how you were connected with them and how the party is supporting you in this process?
Okay, the party has been so vital, you know, in my music journey, because they actually do everything. The recording, they give me the funds for recording, the videographer is actually a member of the party, so all the videos we do here are sponsored by the Communist Party of Kenya. They help me in marketing, because, you know, without the Communist Party of Kenya, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you, comrade. And so the other members we have in the group are, like I told you when I was introducing myself, I'm a member of Pioga Mapinto study cell. This is a cell that we usually meet on Fridays. And, you know, we discuss documents about the ongoings, the political ongoings, whether internationally or locally. So we are like in a class. We are not just a music band, but we also have a class that, you know, we learn about Marxist-Leninism. So the Communist Party of Kenya has been so vital, because they give me the info. They have given me the information about what I have to write. Secondly, they give the funds, and, you know, they also market me by, you know, sharing me in their pages. And, you know, comrades like you have managed to to reach me, comrade.
Comrade, so something that I'm thinking about is a response you gave a few questions ago about how posing revolutionary thought can be seen as crazy to people who are not used to wrestling with these ideas or talking about these yes. ideas. The beginning of my political education came from being handed Fanon's Wretched of the Earth, and Fanon speaks directly to the need to accept that it does sound crazy to want to decolonize or to challenge the status quo. But we have to understand that that is not crazy. It's meant to seem crazy, right? So how can music and art and study for yourself make you understand that what you're presenting is not crazy, but it's actually incredibly calculated?
Okay, comrade, what makes me know that what you are doing is not crazy is that from the documents we've been discussing with the Bangaiza crew comrades, we've been discussing about how the bourgeoisie have been operating and how they do their things. And when we compare that to the reality, we see that they are the same things. It's only that most of the people don't know whatever is going on. But when they click, like I said, everything will be fine and we have more artists of my kind. So it's all about the document and the discussions we've been having in the Europe Yoga Mapinto study cell that has made me know that, you know, it's not a crazy idea. It's only that it's like a small baby. It doesn't still know how to work, but the moment it will grow and grow and get, you know, people just click in complete.
So let's open up a little bit now, instead of focusing so much on music and even more specifically your music, but let's talk about art. So art has a very powerful potential for use as propaganda. Everything from propaganda posters, like the ones that I have behind me. I know the listeners can't see them, but I have some old Soviet posters on the wall behind me. We have music, like we've been talking about in the conversation thus far. We have film. Of course, I mentioned one filmmaker, Kostas Gavras, but we also have the entire Soviet film industry was in many ways propaganda. And the thing is that in the West, propaganda typically has a bad name in terms of when people hear the word propaganda, they always associate it negatively. Whereas we need to think of propaganda as just a way of disseminating the message, a political message to the masses. It doesn't necessarily have to be used with a negative connotation. But the point is that art is a very powerful tool for use. Can you talk about why you feel that art is something that we need to think a little bit more about? I know that a lot of people have a tendency to think solely about theory or solely about organizing, but not think about how to reach out to people with propaganda. Can you talk about why art is something that we need to be thinking a lot more about in terms of reaching the masses, as well as what the Communist Party of Kenya is doing with art beyond just music, if there is, you know, a vibrant art scene within the party?
You know, most of the artistic work, they go hand in hand with talent. So you find that, like in my field of music, music is loved by everybody. So when you sing about something, they connect with it because, you know, it's something they enjoy, you know, like music is something that when somebody listens, he enjoys, you know, rather than you, it's better than, you know, just going there, talking to them, they are listening. Because in Kenya, if you are going to talk about something politics, you have to pay people to listen to you first, you know. So when we do music and, you know, they are listening to the music, the message will get home without, you know, finding all those difficulties. The difficulties you can find when you are trying to organize and do, you know, the normal way.
Yeah, just I know I'm giving the next question to Matt, but before Matt hops in with the question, I just want to let the listeners know that on Guerrilla History, again, the parent podcast for this show, so you'll have to find the episode in your podcast app under the Guerrilla History feed, not the Guerrilla Radio feed. We had an episode about two and a half years ago on Bogdanov's Art and the Working Class, which was one of the first publications from Iskra, which is the publishing house that I'm now on the editorial board of. But it's a great work. You can access the PDF of that book for free. And if you want to listen to the episode, you can find that on the Guerrilla History feed. So my suggestion would be that if you want to hear that conversation in terms of how Russian socialists were thinking about this question back in the 19-teens, check out the book Art and the Working Class. I'll try to remember to link to it in the show notes. And also check out that episode where we talk to the translator of that work, Taylor Genovese. But Matt, feel free to go ahead.
Sorry. My team has joined me. They are here.
Let's have everybody that joined you introduce themselves. And then Matt, feel free to ask the next question after the introductions.
Hello, comrade. And my name is Calvin Carlos Tieno, and I'm a member of the Communist Party of Kenya, specifically study circle called Yugama Pinto, and I'm a dancer.
Thank you so much for joining us, comrade. So the next question I had, if anyone can answer it, I'm really excited for all your answers, is specifically what you all as revolutionary cultural workers, as people who are creating art as praxis, what advice or insights do you want to offer to other people who are going to be listening to this that are artists who might not understand how to get their art to the revolutionary point? I believe that there's a quote, artists are the gatekeepers of truth, that revolutionaries, one of the main priorities is to help people discern reality. So speaking from a genuine point of view, an authentic point of view, is something that I feel like a lot of socialist art attempts to do, communist art attempts to do. But I really want to hear from your practice and your study of creating this revolutionary art, what kind of lessons you learned, things you may not have expected in learning that you can pass on to our international audience.
Okay, comrade. what I can tell, there are other artists who want to be involved in the revolutionary music is that just keep on doing it, even if the reaction is negative for now, because it's like that, because you know of the what the masses have been fed, you know. But as time goes by, they'll just take in, because what you see, what you'll sing about, will be the reality, and they'll be seeing it as days goes by. Okay, comrade, there was one who had not introduced himself.
Oh, greetings, comrade. I'm Cleophas Odhiambo, a member of Yugama Pinto, and also a member of Bangaisa Crew, specifically dancer.
Yes, thank you, comrade. I'm also in the meeting, and I would like maybe then to introduce myself so that I don't. And also, I'm Len Munala, a member of the Communist Party of Kenya, a member of the Central Committee, and there I'm in charge of the peasants and peasants organizations. I'm currently in the rural area, and here I'm the one patroning the group of the artists here who are called Bangaisa. Thank you, comrade. So we can proceed. We are together.
Yeah. So my question was speaking specifically to being a dancer as a revolutionary artist. What does that actually look like in practice? Are there certain things in how do you be a dancer and make revolutionary art? I think is just a really good question for an audience that may not know how to do that.
Okay, as we say, there is time for everything. So we have time for revolutionary work, and I also have time for dancing, whereby we program ourselves in different schedules.
But in using dance specifically for making revolutionary art or making communist propaganda, that's really what I'm trying to understand is, how do you use that skill, that craft that you've developed to serve the party or to help the party grow?
Okay. First and foremost, we have the costumes that are written, the CPK logo and whatever. So whenever I go for the shooting of the videos, we wear those costumes to advertise the party and to spread the propaganda of our party.
So basically, comrade is trying to tell you that whenever they are shooting their dance videos, they wear the party's propaganda. So most of the people, become curious. So They are good dancers, and why are they wearing that such kind of shirts and, you know, the costumes? And most of the people are, you know, just get interested in whatever they are doing.
So this is something that it relates to some questions that I asked earlier in the conversation, but now that we have more comrades that have joined us, I kind of want to re-ask it perhaps in a little bit different way. That way everybody has the opportunity to say what they think about this, which is that we have to use art as communists in order to propagandize the masses, because otherwise the ideas that we have never really get out there. We can write a lot of books, we can write a lot of journal articles, and believe me, we have. But many people are never going to have access to those books and those journal articles. I know, because I work with the books and journal articles, and most people who I talk to who are not very engaged with politics don't even know that those works exist. So trying to introduce people to these ideas is very, very difficult. Whereas art is something that is meant to be hyper accessible, something that everybody can easily consume, can easily get the ideas of, and is presented to them in a way that's easily digestible so that they understand what the meaning is. You don't always have to treat them as babies, you know, give them the idea, this is what you need to think, but to present things for them to get them thinking about what are the material realities of society and the material realities of their life. And by presenting these things, you really are able to get some of these ideas that otherwise would be, you know, trapped in the halls of academia in many cases to the masses. So comrades, I'm curious if all of you can answer this question in however you feel, but what is the importance of art for building the communist movement?
The importance of art is very important because we are saying that we are developing from a society, and we have various ways of even educational ways. For example, borrowing even from the bourgeois setup. One of the ways they have used to entrench their authority in various ways is also using various arts. For example, you will see even the kind of songs that are being sung, and we are dancing them in even social places and others are only meant to make us think like that capitalism is the alpha and omega. So basically, the way to also digest it is also to see, for example, in Kenya here we are having the gengeton form of music, which majority are enjoying, and it talks about even commoditization of human beings and such, like mostly of the opposite gender, that is the female gender. But now when you go to social places, people are dancing it and it is like normal, like nothing is wrong about it. So we are saying that if that one could be the thing, then we can also equip and get a few artists whom we can equip ideologically. And now we can also give another way whereby now people can now see which form of, for example, when we sing about the song Africa is Crying, people can relate to it, and then they can start asking them, this song is danceable, but then which content, where is the source of this idea from? So at least when we can interact with a few people after performances, and then then people can now get to know that at least there is another new way of thinking, new mode of thinking, different from the normal mode of thinking. So it is always important to see how we can also merge art and the revolution. Even, for example, the revolutionary songs that we have always sung, we borrow them even, for example, during in the camp of idealism, whereby we are seeing, for example, in church, where before they proceed, they can motivate themselves with songs and such like. So we are saying in the struggle also, we have a lot of challenges, and instead we can have some revolutionary songs to motivate us and also now push in the struggle as we proceed, just like I'm using the Christian as an example, because you see, even for example, right now in the challenges are much, even 2,000 years ago, after the death of Christ, they'll still bring up some few songs and to remind themselves and encourage themselves. So to us also, it is very important that we can also figure where the revolution has come from. We can figure out the socialist experiments like from Russia, China, Cuba, Venezuela, and the rest, and see how the struggle has always gone. And also now bring a song related to the practical things that are also happening, and also motivate ourselves in the struggle. So we can just look at the revolutionary, you know, the revolutionary songs sometimes take revolutionary culture, but also we don't want to advance with that when we are leaving the masses behind. So we get also where the masses are, what do the masses like a lot, and we can now see a way or a tactic how we can now get in and now advance with them. So that one has been very important to us, and in Kenya here, that's why we have used, for example, the Bangaiza songs is a form of hip hop a bit, and also Gengeton a bit, because we want to get more to the people and at least bring in some new ideas in the concept. So that's how we have also been trying. Thank you, comrade.
So other comrades, feel free to also answer this question, but I do have a follow-up, because some of the things that you were saying, comrade, are related to the next question that I had. So I figure I might as well put that question out there now, and maybe everybody will be able to answer this at the same time that they're answering about art more generally. So the question is about influences. Of course, when we're talking about art and political propaganda, we have to think about influences. Not only in perspective of political influences, because of course we're talking with members of the Communist Party of Kenya, and I think the political influences will be fairly obvious, but everybody has their own, their own route into the political scene, into their specific ideology. So I'm curious about ideological influences that each of you have, and the way that you came into the way of thinking that you did, any works that you read or thinkers or movements that particularly inspired you. But also, speaking of art more generally, there's also going to be influences in art. And I know a comrade who just answered this question, you talked about how church in some ways influenced the way that you think about art, and how that was influencing people in society, and then also hip hop. So can you talk a little bit about your artistic influences, specific artists or genre of art that you find particularly inspiring, and that you use when you make your art, and also these ideological influences that you then try to put together into your propagandistic art?
Thank you, comrade. I see we have, when we are talking about the ideological influence and also the art, first of all, what we need to admit, for example, in the country here, is about political illiteracy, whereby most of our people do not know mostly of the solutions. For example, capitalism is just, we are seeing crisis, whether you are a Marxist or not a Marxist, there are crises that everybody is lamenting about them. But now people do not. So we suffer about the political, ideological deficiency in the country, whereby people want solutions, but they don't know the way forward. They keep on getting and gazing, but their ideas always end up into a capitalist mode of thinking. So at the end of the day, how we are combining it, in this, for example, the Gengeton and the hip hop, our target mostly now, it is the youth, because based on the Kenyan culture, the elderly are now using the type of music they are using more is the native music, depending on various places where you are coming from. So you'll get, even if you're coming from Nyanza here, there is another one called Hangla music. When you're going to the central place, there is Mugithi music, and you're going to Kalenjin, there is also the Kalenjin music and all that. So they concentrate the elderly, but now the youths are so versatile, and they are also trying to combine both local music and international music. So to them, they enjoy more of this music. So you get that with this type of propaganda, it has a target, which is targeting mostly the certain age set, which is now the youthful age set that is now helping us now to proceed. I've been able also to relate it to the chat because also in Kenya here, we are also dominated with religion is a big problem when you're advancing the Marxist Leninist propaganda, because now we are having the two dominating religion, which is now Christianity and Muslim. And now Christianity is too dominating, whereby it is taking almost 80% of the population. So you get that when you want us to clearly understand, for example, when I'm discussing it, I'm discussing this with even our brothers and sisters at here in Kenya, then when I relate it with at least the church issue or the Christian issue, then they can be able to relate it. However, we are always saying that when you see anything sustainable, it means it is supporting the existing government. And that is why even the current government has used the church in big capacity to make sure that they can advance. And now they are in power. Each and every Sunday when you wake up, there is a church propaganda there, and the local politicians are always on there because now they are using that to deceive the people. So we always relate it a bit, and we want to advance now beyond that one. And we tell, for example, here there is a say that says, Nyimbo ni sabuni ya roho, which means that the songs are the soap of the heart. It is always relating the work of the soap, which is always cleaning a few things. So when they say the songs are this, the soap of the heart, then you always tell them then also songs can be the soap of the revolution. And sometimes when the struggle is too much, we tell you that you can go sit behind. And now at least instead of listening to the normal mode, then listen to this particular song. So these particular songs are targeting the youths most probably. And now we are trying to diversify them a bit. And we are now thinking even on various modes how we can recruit from various age sets so that we can have various types of music that can also be accommodative for both youths and the elderly, and not just a particular age set.
Other comrades, I want you to be able to answer about your influences as well, but I have a funny anecdote that I want to share quickly. Since you mentioned about religion in Kenya, this is just a funny story. It's not really a question or anything for anybody to answer, but maybe you'll find it funny as well. Before I lived in Russia, which is where I live now, I was living and working in a laboratory in Germany. This is before I left science. One of my people that I was working with in the lab was from Kenya. And during our breaks at work, we would always talk about politics. And eventually she said, "You know, Henry, you're always talking about politics. Why are you even in science?" I said, "I don't know." And then I left science. But anyway, that's a different story. The story that I have is we would always talk about politics, and she was always complaining about how pervasive religion was in everyday conversations and just society generally in Kenya. And one of the examples that she gave, which was hilarious, and I know that this will probably be funny only for our American listeners, she said, "Here is how crazy religion is in Kenya. My mom's favorite program on the television is the 700 Club," which blew me away, because growing up in the United States, the 700 Club is that what all of the super, super religious Americans would watch. This is Pat Robertson's television program where he would talk about gospel and talk about how the world was ending and things like that. So the fact that her mom watched the 700 Club in Kenya as like religiously, and I use this with the pun intended, she watched the show religiously. It was very funny to me, but also really showed how pervasive religion must be that and Christianity specifically, that the 700 Club of all shows was being broadcast across Kenya to the extent that my coworker's mom was watching it as her favorite program. So again, that maybe isn't that funny of a story for other listeners, but if you come from the United States and you know the 700 Club, you know, you probably would be as surprised as I was.
Yes, Probably comrade. That is a very funny, but it is not unique. It is happening, comrade. It is real because that is the way. And now we are meant to believe that like Christianity is, makes you to conform with a lot of injustices, because we are made to believe that power comes from somewhere above, and also riches are also made by somebody superior, and you are chosen by somebody superior. So there are even some programs there that are even showing how you are poor, and then by luckily, without explaining, you cannot explain the mystery, then you just become rich from grace to grace. So such like programs are always there. And in Kenya here, they carry the day. When you come, they are the favorite programs, and most of them also, we are calling them, some of them, soap operas. The love between a poor lady and a rich guy somewhere. And then you see, it is like the rich family is treating the poor family like not people. And then by grace of God and such like mysteries, that the lady can get married there. Then they say it is elevated. But no, only now, it is just now, people relate them with whatever is happening in reality, and they find it encouraging. And at the end of the effect, it is always to make sure that they picturize it like capitalism is the alpha and omega, which is not the case, and to make sure that the class society is not challenged. So they are there, and they exist, and religion is playing a fundamental role to make sure that capitalism is not challenged. Yeah.
Matt, I know the 700 Club is your favorite show, so why don't you tell us a little bit about how much you love it?
No, I don't watch it.
I think it's interesting to speak about, Henry, you brought up how propaganda is sort of a dirty word in the U.S. or Western spaces, but it's also... it's saying that the church is propagandizing every week and every day on these television channels. And obviously there's a thing called Hollywood, which is clearly a U.S. wing of propaganda, right? But I have friends that love Marvel movies. And if you start talking about the military's involvement in it, they get really upset. They don't even discuss anything. They just think that that's not important. So I think it's interesting that propaganda is seen as something that's sort of trying to talk to you or convince you, but not in a way that is respectful. It's seen as almost like a disrespectful way of convincing people. But that's why I think the art of the Communist Party of Kenya and revolutionary cultural workers takes this sort of anti-arrogance tone to it. It's about trying to inform, but not necessarily direct or demand outside of what it's talking to the masses. So yeah, I just want to speak to something in talking about how we can borrow things from bourgeois art. One of the biggest artists in the world, the Canadian rapper Drake, he speaks about how his writing process, and obviously he doesn't necessarily write most of what he does, but in approving certain lyrics, he talks about the need to have every lyric be an Instagram caption or like a photo caption, like a short little blurb that is easily quotable, that is relatable to your everyday life. And I find that really interesting because it's not that different than sort of what Paulo Freire talks about in regards to how to talk to people about how to elevate their consciousness, to start with something that they can grasp and understand from their everyday life and then apply it into revolutionary science. And so, yeah, just speaking to specifically your writing process or your cultural development process with how you're creating art as a party and as a study group, I feel like that, how you decide certain lyrics or how you decide certain beats, I think is really interesting for our audience who, as especially the cultural workers listening, may struggle to understand what would be more effective to reach for. Is it, do you go for the more simple and direct, or can you introduce people to more complex ideas through art? Obviously, I believe all of the above, but specifically to what you guys are trying to do right now, I'm really interested in sort of how you go about curating what you're going to do.
On how we manage to, how we write our lyrics. First of all, when we write, some of our songs are in Swahili, but specifically they are not it's not that pure Kiswahili. It's a slang called sheng. So, you know, when you use the slang sheng and you know, the youth will, you know, will want to listen to it because, you know, it's something that that's how we speak, that's how we communicate daily. So you just take, you know, like if you are condemning the government, you condemn it in sheng, you know. You write the song in sheng, in the slang called sheng. And they'll just listen to it, comrade, that way. And they'll get the message right there.
You spoke to the type of slang that you write your songs in, which I find incredibly interesting because it's exactly what we're talking about, using the language of the people to speak to the people. So if you could speak to sort of the intricacies or the content of that slang, what's the slang getting at or where does the slang sort of develop? The example that I was sort of asking for was just if there are certain words that come up for you more often or words you enjoy in the slang that get to the point, allow you to communicate more clearly.
Thank you. The slang here, for example, we are talking about here in Kenya, for example, one of the slangs here we are having is called Cheng, which is actually coming from the working class areas, which is the corrupt Swahili language, because it is mixed up with Swahili, partly with some other local languages, and also partly also borrowing from English. So it is mixed up, and when you come, for example, in Kenya, the working class areas there, you'll get that it is easy to communicate. For example, in the urban areas, the metropolitan areas, it is so easy to communicate with them in slang rather than discussing them with purely like Swahili language or even English fluently, then you will have more problems. So, and it has a particular age setup, or even if not the age setup, then also the people that have maybe lived in the working class area. For example, we have those that were born in the working class areas and have lived there for the rest of their years. So that is the language they get very easy to communicate with. But now, in terms of it, the most people who we will get the majority there also in terms of the age set is also the youthful in terms of this slang languages. In the wider area of Kenya, the people who the others will prefer either to fluently speak their native language or to fluently speak the Swahili, which is a national language, or to fluently speak English, which is also one of national languages in Kenya. So you'll get these three particular characters in various places. So it will depend with actually also in terms of also targets. For example, when you're talking about this slang, we are targeting the youths who are even in the rural area, but now also have interacted with other youths are in various perspectives in other urban areas, so they understand the slang thing. And now social media has played also a viral role, so that we are understanding these slangs. Even when they are in the rural, you meet these slangs, you understand them, not like some old days whereby you get that there was a different barriers like in 20 years ago, whereby the slang, you could only learn about it when you are in urban areas. But in the rural, when you come back, it's a new thing. So now the social media perspective is harmonizing this thing, and we can learn about it in various ways. So based on the setup, sometimes one of the challenges that with the slang, you will not get... mostly those who are who want to depict themselves as corporates. So you get that in the corporate also, for example, they don't get to understand, they don't get involved in more slang. So it is very difficult to also get those who want to depict themselves as corporate. For example, even the teachers mostly the teachers in the society and even in other areas and such like. So you get a problem like that and such like.
Does anyone else want to also add to that answer?
Talking about the slang, you know, we are youths and most of our targets are also youths because, you know, they are the most energetic, and if we teach them about these things when they are still young, they grow with it, you know, it will be easier for us to It will be easier for the process that we are on, which we are under. So we use the slang, first of all, just to get the attention of the youths, because first they are, we believe they are the future. So if we teach them early, it will be the, it will be better. So, okay, come, I think I'm done.
No, thank you. So my follow-up question to this is about art and language. So for myself as a cultural worker and artist, the reason I see art as critical for my political work is that language is sort of the way that we can miscommunicate to each other. Language comes with its own preconceived notions. I use a certain phrase, it means different things to different people. But art allows us to transcend language in different ways and communicate these ideas more in an emotional plane or spiritual plane. So I just wanted you all to speak to that idea that art is a way to not only, you spoke to the language that you use in art, but specifically how art is a language that allows people to shift their worldview or shift exactly their perspective.
Comrade, comrade Munala said, that you know, in Kenya we have a quote that says that Goma ni sabuni ya roho, which means that music is the soap to the heart. So when we do this kind of music, and you know, most of the people enjoy it. Like I told you, they enjoy it because it is danceable. Then as time goes by, they start now listening to the lyrics. I think it will be easy. It is easier to communicate to them rather than, you know, the normal way of organizing. Because first of all, you know, music, somebody will not just like the music, because a person can like the music because of the way it sounds, not because of the message. Then, you know.
Yeah, thank you. First, based on the historical circumstances of Kenya, maybe Africa and other colonized countries at large, based on the colonizers and their intentions were meant to believe that language is something that is static and it's not changeable. And that one has been inculcated to most of us. That one is making people to view like other few languages that might even come in the process to be like vulgar and such, like mostly the so-called corporate people. However, we know that language is produced in the process of production, and that one is something that you cannot contradict with. For example, even in the slang that is just being produced here, you realize that it's a mixture. Even the origin of Kiswahili just some years back is a mixture. So at the revolutionary angle, we just view this language development of even slang and even others that might come before. Like one of the now the slang is the Sheng one, the one we are calling the Sheng here in Kenya. It is actually in the process of production. What people get so easy to interact with each other in the process. For example, some of them used to borrow from. It is borrowed maybe from the industrial area where people, how the boss is harassing the most notorious word that the boss always likes using. So when they come about it, so they relate it and they pick it, and then they say like that this word is also means even suffering and also such like. So you get like some of these words are borrowed from each and every place, and it is always a way to make that the workers can interact among themselves easily without interference, without getting challenges of interacting. So that one has been the cause. So in terms of languages, as long as production is involved, we will still get more languages. We just need to also see the characters. For example, a specific character in Kenya is that when the language of Sheng is produced or a new thing that is produced, the youth group is easily adapting to it. For example, even the social media, before the elderly adapted to it, the youth who adapted for it for too long, like Facebook, Twitter, and even WhatsApp and the rest. The old age came to adapt it once they realized that they can also use it in various ways, and it is more convenient and all that. Even you will get that even the industries and the bourgeoisie themselves, they still insisted in other old methods of communication. However, once now they got now these changes now is now real, and they could use it even like now, let us say WhatsApp, if you want to send a document even on email, you will not know if the person do not reply, you will not know if he has read or not. So on WhatsApp, we'll be able to know that this person has read my document, and we can proceed. And it's more faster and such like, not the long process. So it has come out of a long way. So you get like the youth here in Kenya are very much vibrant and tolerating the new ideas and trying new things. But the other age set is a bit conservative and they want to believe it. So in terms of language, that is why you will see the slang language. When you are discussing about the slang, we are mostly targeting a certain age set, which has now been receptive. And we have been nurtured in a way of thinking that once you pass that age set, then you should now be thinking of now pure languages and not now corrupting these languages with now slang and all that. So sometimes you'll get in Kenya, it is unique to get an old man speaking Sheng, and people will be wondering that so-and-so is getting old, but he's not accepting it. Wow, what is wrong with this guy? So it has been a setup, yani the normal mode of setup, how it is built. So that's why for a long time, the Sheng language is still dominating among the youth and in the working class. But now when you are growing old, you are now advised that now start communicating with them with these other languages. That one is just the mode. But now in the real sense is that language is language. As long as people can communicate, understand each other, that is the most important thing. And it is produced for to help us in the process of production. That one is one of my views, Com.
Okay, thank you, comrades. So what I can say about slang is that most of youths here around in Kenya lives in slums areas. So you find out that they do a lot of hard work so that they can sustain their life. So what we do, we use Sheng as a slang language so that we can teach them on what's right and how they can get the message of communists so that they can learn more and see the difference between capitalism and communism so that they can adapt to it, and also they can get our message so that they get it clearly. And also when youths are advancing, you know, here in Kenya, they also advance in that Sheng language. Sometimes you get that we have that Sheng language and we get another advanced language called Shembeteng. So when they advance in the language, we also advance in it. We learn the new advanced language, which is now Shembeteng, and we get to know the language. So we also use the language to teach them. And also to the old people, you know, they can't get to hear the Sheng and the Shembeteng. So what we do, we can teach them, we can translate to them a few lyrics on the songs that we wrote so that they also can get the message. Although it is very difficult to sometimes translate to them, but sometimes we also manage to translate to them. So when we are in such mass groups, as we teach them what the ideologies that we got to study in our study cells, so we also, when we are teaching them about the ideologies, sometimes we can also play for them our few songs. They listen to the songs and also we translate to the message so that they can get the message clearly.
When you talk about the slang, whereby it is Sheng,
here in Kenya, the most trending music is the urban tone and is sung in Sheng. So for we Bangaisa, we are in the rural area whereby the people around us do not know the Sheng language. So for us, we use the Sheng language to teach them the language, since the language is spoken in the urban areas and they are so curious to know about it. And as we look deep into it, there is also a dictionary called the Sheng Dictionary, whereby the citizens read the dictionaries and try to relate with whatever we sing. So nowadays we use the Sheng so as to advance with the trend. Yeah. So that's why we like singing in Sheng, because most of the people, mostly the majority, use the Sheng. Yeah. That's why we like advancing in Sheng. Yeah. I can say that.
Okay, comrade. Just word on comrade Carlos' remarks. He was saying that most of the people didn't know about Sheng because we are in the rural area. But you know, with the advancement of the social medias, and now most of the people have smartphones, we start, social media help us, you know, knowing Sheng. So these days it's not all about you being in rural or in urban. When a new slang comes out, we just know. Like comrade Cleophas said that Sheng has given birth to another slang that is now even more technical. It's called Shembeteng. It's just, it's just the normal Sheng, but we just add some words. You don't confuse the old people because we don't want them to. It was like they were starting to understand, you know, the normal Sheng. So we had to confuse them even more so that when we are talking about them, they don't listen. You know, it's just a tactic of the youth. So when we use, you know, I take, you know, the Shembeteng, write it in a song. You know, most of the youth will learn, like, what? You know, it's criticizing the government in our language. So they'll feel like they own it. So that's why I feel like Sheng is another way, another effective way of communicating through the art, yeah.
Just another anecdote before I ask the final question. You mentioned about this other form of slang that is being generated to confuse the old people who are catching on to Sheng. It reminds me of a story that my wife tells me. So my wife is from Crimea. And of course, being from Crimea, she grew up learning Russian and Ukrainian. And so she knew both languages fluently. Her family is Crimean Tatar. And while they didn't teach the children Crimean Tatar in the house, the parents would speak Crimean Tatar to one another when they didn't want the children to know what they were saying. But of course, the children eventually started to just learn naturally what the parents were saying in Crimean Tatar, so they knew all of the secrets. I guess the parents had to make their own slang language afterwards, because in the same way that the old people are learning Sheng, my wife was learning Crimean Tatar by you know, eavesdropping on her parents. Now, on to the final question. And Matt, this question is also for you, because everyone who is on the call, except for me, is a cultural worker. I am very much not artistic. So this is something that really fascinates me in terms of thinking about how to progress as an artist while also utilizing that art for your political aims. So can each of you talk about how you think about these two sides of that coin? How do you improve yourself and advance as an artist? How do you continue to develop your art while also thinking about how to utilize that art for political aims? Matt, why don't I start with you? I know that, you know, I brought you into this conversation as a co-host in part because you are a cultural worker, but we haven't heard your thoughts on these topics really during this conversation. So we'll start with you, and then we'll bring in our comrades from Kenya on the same question.
Well, I just sent you a DM saying that I reject that you're not a creative person, Henry. You write, translate, produce. You are a creative person. Everyone is a creative person. That is one of the biggest prides that I feel, is helping inform people that they have a creative practice. Whether or not they nurture it and help develop it is secondary, but you only get better at what you practice, right? So practicing being creative, practicing communicating creatively, is a very important part about being a creative cultural worker, a revolutionary cultural worker. A big part about being revolutionary is trying to open the door for new ideas and new action, right? So I think for myself, how I deepen my practice is I'm constantly studying, always the different study groups, different organizations. I'm a part of trying to get out of my bubble, deepen my understanding, my commitment to the world's peoples, and just trying to always challenge my own beliefs, criticism, self-criticism, and just deepen my understanding of these incredibly complicated and nuanced ideas that require us, that are required of us to be doing revolutionary work. And then when it comes to the craft, I'm constantly watching new things or reading new things and engaging artists. I think a big part of being an artist is knowing that millions and millions and millions of people, billions of people have been doing art for as long as humans have existed. Storytelling is one of our oldest practices. Music is almost as old as that, right? So it, knowing that there's such a deep and rich history there, that we're standing on the shoulders of so many revolutionaries. When I speak to you, like, one of my mentors was Harry Belafonte, and he was an incredibly revolutionary cultural worker, right? Like, perhaps one of the greatest ones of this last 100 years, right? Him and his mentor Paul Robeson. So I think about them a lot, and how they went about and really just try to politically emulate the types of lessons that they gave us so that we can continue to build this thing forward. But I think the most important thing is to know that there is no such thing as an individual revolutionary. There's no such thing as an individual artist. I spoke about Drake earlier. Drake is the accumulation of hundreds and thousands of people's labor, right? And every artist is pulling from either art from the past and their contemporaries. So I feel like every artist is working in dialogue and some kind of communication with the craft and the history of the craft. So informing that is so important. And the people who pull for more inspirations tend to be developing something more unique too. So when we hear someone like singer-songwriter I really enjoy, Frank Ocean, like he pulls from so many different genres of music, right? So it sounds very different. But if you understand what his influences are, you can start to understand how he comes up with this new thing, right? So just always expanding my ear, trying to expand my interests is a big part of trying to inform my art, but also just talking to people. I remember something, this is a small story, and I'll pass the mic to our comrades in Kenya. But when I was in a screenwriting class, when I was 18 years old, my professor, who ghostwrites books for celebrities, and that's a whole other thing, that like these celebrities are seen as these incredible artists, but they're not artists. Some of them aren't artists. They're just famous people who have artists who are doing the creative work behind the scenes. So my screenwriting professor, who is that type of person, she had us read our scripts to children as an exercise to get to see what children thought of it, because children are such intense critics. Because children aren't necessarily taught that it could be seen as rude or something to say a critique. And so I remember reading, one of my classmates was reading a script to a child, and they're like, "Is this supposed to be funny? You said this was supposed to be funny." And it's just like getting used to sharing your work with other people, being able to take criticism, I feel like is a big part of trying to develop as a creative and as a cultural worker, and just developing that practice over and over and finding like-minded people and revolutionaries. I mean, If I hadn't found other Marxist-Leninist cultural workers, if I had met Harry Belafonte, my art would be mostly bourgeois art, right? And it's really about understanding that difference. What is this art serving? What is it trying to accomplish? Is it reinforcing bourgeois ideology, or is it dispelling the myths of bourgeois ideology? Is it informing a collective consciousness developing consciousness, or is it speaking to people in an arrogant way, right? And so just those types of questions I'm always asking myself and challenging myself with what I'm creating. And really just, who is this for? What is this for? What is the goal? Always trying to keep that North Star of the goal is to raise people's consciousness. The goal is to bring people together. The goal is to demean our oppressor. The goal is to disrupt our opposition. So that is my thing. And it's also just to raise up other artists, Henry, for people like yourself, to see yourself as someone who is a creative force in the world. And anyone really has that potentiality. It's really just about whether or not they're willing to put in that labor, put in that study, and to force something into existence, because no project necessarily wants to exist. And sometimes if a project is coming to fruition too quickly or with so much support in certain ways, that that is sometimes a point of reflection, is like, wait, why is this coming into the world with no tension or traction? Because anything that is revolutionary will be challenged by so many other forces, right?
Yeah. And I'm very happy that you brought up Harry Belafonte, one of my favorite musicians. I even talked about him in my class relatively recently to my students, and they were probably very confused as to why I went off on this long tangent on how great Harry Belafonte was, because it was not related to the subject matter. But I digress. Comrades in Kenya, same question for all of you. How do you think about advancing yourselves as artists and then utilizing your art to aid in political goals?
Okay, comrade down. First of all, we know we have to advance our ideology. We have to advance our ideology, because I believe that the artist part of it is already there. So what we have to do is just to advance the, you know, the ideology, then, you know, turn it into music and continue influencing the masses, and, you know, counter the bourgeoisie propaganda. Yes. So, but the only challenge that is there now is most of the people still, you know, don't think we are serious, by the way, because of, they have been fed with, you know, a lot of, you know, they have been confused by the bourgeoisie. So even if your song is, you know, sweet, or let's say it's catching, some people will not want to share it because of, you know, of the content. But Mata said that anything that comes into this world must come with a little bit, you know, of challenges, tension, you know, eh? So that's the sweeter part of it, you know. There, when you think all we have to do now is to advance our ideology, then, you know, change it into music, then, you know, put it out there.
Okay, thank you. So, like Comrade Darwin said, we need to advance in the ideologies that we get to study in our study cells. After advancing in the ideology, we get a content on writing a song so that we can teach the masses. So also what I can add on what Darwin said, after getting the content and writing the content, we also organize some few masses. Like we organize some few masses, and in the process, we get to teach them on what we know and what we have, so that they get the political part of it, of which sometimes we get some few challenges, because you can organize and some people don't interact in it. So we just continue with those who is willing to interact with us, so that they can get the political part of the content that we are doing through art. Yeah. That's what I can say.
Wow. Thank you. Also, the Congress talked about advancing the struggle, most probably, which has been the primary cause, and that one has been because of maybe our source of thinking has been always, when we meet here, we always, after discussions, we have always pushed and collected resources together, collectively as a party, also to make sure that we can advance the revolution through their art. So one of the limiting factors limiting things that have also made, like, you get that we have advanced in the in the struggle with the music art. However, as artists, also they have also slackened a bit to advance on the other one. That means to maybe join other artists and maybe sing like maybe the love songs and such like songs that are not related to you need to the revolution. So that one means maybe most probably which can be received by now any other person that is not that is either a communist or not a communist. Yeah, so you get that our songs have been biased because they have been mostly pro Marxism, Leninism. So in terms of the general songs which maybe they can use to maybe let us say earn an income from, then we have slackened a bit, and that is based on also material reality, because sometimes they got the song, we take a lot of time to consolidate maybe resources, and you know the songs can only, you can only be marketable, for example, or sustainable when for example you can produce this song, and also the song can help you produce another song. So that one means for us to make sure that we can advance, then we need first to get to get a song which also will need resources, and also now there is a new trend, we need to market it, and then after marketing this one then now at least we can get more fans and more viewers in be it YouTube and any other social media, then it can help us now earn something, then at least the art can be a bit sustainable. So right now sustainability of the art is actually one of the big problems, because some of our songs have only influenced the left, and we have, even right now we are now doing some groundnut projects, and even the Skumawiki project, because we also want to get some few resources from it so that we can also produce all other songs, and then now see if we can get more resources, so that, because here as the level of music and the nature how it is advanced right now, you don't just produce it and leave it at that point. Once you produce, you have also another task to market, and now we are having these social media influencers. Now we need to engage them, and for them to also do the marketing at a free win, they have a price, and the price cuts like we on a weekly basis. So it means that for us to market it also strongly, so that we can get shows and other be invited in other occasions, in other functions, and even get the media visibility, we need some good resources to do that, which is a challenge we have accepted. And right now we are very much deep into looking for the resources, and actually this year that is one of our projects that we are going to produce a revolutionary song. And also besides the revolution, also today we will want a sustainable way, because also as a party we were also discussing with the members here to tell them that at least the music, besides the contribution, should be in a position to also sustain us in various ways, like help us help the members contribute in terms of monthly dues and such like, because that is when the party can also get some few resources. So it is a good, it is a challenge that has been well received by the members here, and we are hoping that the projects that we have placed down together here will succeed, and will help us now to produce these songs and be in a position to also market them, and also now advance now beyond now what we are calling politically, also advance, so that we can be able to sustain our economical life and also advance in the struggle. So that one is our real position now.
Okay. Thank you very much, comrades, for joining us on Guerrilla Radio. It was a great pleasure and an honor to get to speak with all of you. Can you tell the listeners how they can find your work in case they are interested in following up? Of course, we will also have it linked in the show notes, but let the listeners know where they can find your work.
Okay, we have a YouTube channel, Bangaisa Crew. We also have some of our content posted on the Communist Party of Kenya YouTube channel. You can find me on Twitter as Davin Kayostro. At Davin Kayostro, we also have a Twitter. We also have a TikTok account, Bangaisa. Bangaisa Crew. A Facebook page. We also have a Facebook page, Bangaisa Crew 254.
Okay. Great. Any other comrades, if you have additional places where we can find you, let us know.
Thank you. Yeah. Now that the artists also, we can find them via Bangaisa Crew, the way they have said, on YouTube channel, and Bangaisa Crew 254 on Facebook, Bangaisa Crew on Twitter, and also now on TikTok also as Bangaisa _254. Then now also in the party, those who want to also get us, you can get me, that is Leon Munash. Leon at Twitter. In Twitter is Leon_Munash. And I will also get us at Communist KE. That is the party Twitter handle. And then on Facebook, you'll get me as Leon Munash. And on Facebook, the party account, you'll get it as Communist Party of Kenya. That is on Facebook. And also on Instagram, it will be Communist Party of Kenya. Yeah, so that is on YouTube. We are also there as Communist Party of Kenya. So that is all of our details in terms of how our availability in the social media. And maybe to add more, maybe on email, you can SMS the party at info@communistparty.org. My personal email is leon.munash@gmail.com. So that is, the viable information at the moment.
Okay. If there's no one else, Matt, how can the listeners find you and your work?
Yeah, you can find my Twitter is @MattXRed, and my Instagram is just my name, Matt Deitch, and pretty much everything's there. My portfolio/business consulting website is multi-industries.com. I have to update that website, but that's where you can find all my work in one neat place. But I just want to say to the comrades in Kenya, this conversation was really inspiring, and it's great to hear you guys using music for revolutionary purposes. I hope to see so much more, and I just wish you guys so much luck and good vibes as you continue the struggle.
I second those thoughts. Listeners, you can find me on Twitter at Huck1995, HUCK1995. And you can keep up with the latest Guerrilla Radio releases by following our parent program, Guerrilla History, on Twitter at @Guerrilla_pod. That's GURRILLA_pod. And until next time, listeners, solidarity. Sexy glasses from styrofoam. You wanted more than a model home. Every week we plan our escape. I fuck with autumn for the changes. My family is the foliage, the branches for the nameless. My roots as deep as holiest. I console the mothers who saw the streets as fathers to raise a wild few who ended up amongst the scholars. Yeah, that's why I'm praying for our daughters. So they can lead us through these waters. Cause when mama's proud, she's the grace that we charter. Ambition is akin to intuition. Saturdays with your mind on empty, spirit on extra, body on me.
Won't buy what the soul can't see. Won't touch what the heart can't read. Waiting for a cold case of basics. They just wanna see if we'll make it. Same answers, new faces. Circles round these places. Plexiglass and some styrofoam. You want it more than a model home.